Monster Man, Episode 510, Burn Flower and Cat, Psionic. Hello, and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the gaming books of yesteryear. And as I do, I'm taking a look at the monsters that I find in them, their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games. In today's episode, we are continuing our journey through the monsters of Athas, the post-apocalyptic fantasy world that is home to the Dark Sun campaign setting for Advanced Dungeons & Dragons 2nd Edition. As I've mentioned in previous episodes, please remember that I am currently on a boat, so if you have a question or comment about this episode, I'd love to hear it, but I won't be able to answer it until I get back. This episode was recorded in advance. Similarly, if you've backed the Patreon, which I'd be delighted if you did, at patreon.com/monsterman, I will not have had an opportunity to thank you because I'm recording this episode before you did that. I guess thank you anyway. All right, our first monster for today is the burn flower. The burn flower is another environmental hazard monster, and it is a flower that burns you. This one has a little bit of a science fiction explanation for its deadly ability, which a lot of the Athasian monsters have. So this flower has petals that secrete a sticky sap, and this sap forms a reflective coating on their inner surfaces, and they rotate to face the sun, a bit like a sunflower, but by kind of opening and closing the petals, I guess, you basically create an Archimedes mirror type of situation, focusing the sun's rays like a burning glass. Now, individually, this might not be so dangerous, but there are 100 burn flowers per 10 foot by 10 foot, that's approximately 3 meter by 3 meter, for my metric listeners, patch of ground. So all of those heat beams together can add up. Specifically, they can add up to 10d4 damage if you're within 20 yards, approximately 18 meters, of the flowers, and a little bit less at longer ranges, all the way down to 10d2, which is still not no damage. Athasian characters are a little bit tougher than their counterparts from the world of Greyhawk or whatever, but nobody likes just taking 15 damage out of the blue. One quality that the burn flowers' rays have that is quite unusual, well, indeed, it's unheard of, I think, in modern D&D, is that they also ignite objects that you're wearing or holding. So you could take damage from the heat beam, and then your cloak would catch on fire, and you'd have to decide between running out of the attack range and putting out the fire. This is a system that might work in Dark Sun, and I hope you can hear the skepticism in my voice. And my skepticism is not based on this being, like, unrealistic. I may have gone onto a little bit too much of a tangent about the brambleweed being quote-unquote unrealistic. It was very late at night. In the gray light of dawn, I'm a little bit more concerned about practicality. See, here's the thing. Having the PC's items combust, and you have to make a saving throw for each one in order to avoid it being destroyed or damaged, that makes sense in a sort of real-world simulation kind of way, right? And it's not like magic items are invulnerable either. They just get a bonus on their save. But so, that makes sense. If I were lit on fire, I wouldn't just be hurt. My clothes would also be destroyed. And I have lots of things on me that I wouldn't like to lose. Like, apart from the awkward nudity, I could replace my clothes and shoes. But if I was out and about when this happened, well, not only would it be bad to be injured in some kind of emergency, it would be even worse to realize that some of the tools that I would normally use to deal with such a crisis, like my phone, wallet, and keys, had been damaged or destroyed. Okay, my clothes all got burned off. Well, I have more clothes at home, but it's a shame that I can't get home or open my door if I do. So, the idea of attacking player characters' possessions makes sense in theory, although PCs hate it. They'd much rather lose hit points than stuff. As a rule, hit points can be regenerated. But also, I feel like there's a practical obstacle here, which is, do you know how much crap D&D characters carry around? I'm not the person who keeps the most detailed track of what my D&D character carries, like I never touch the money, for instance. But just glancing at my sheet, and this is an old version of my sheet that hasn't been updated in a long time, so a combination of my old sheet and rough memory tells me that I would have to roll saves for a suit of magic scale armor, a bow, a rapier, a short sword, a backpack, a bedroll, a mess kit, a tinderbox, 10 torches, 50 feet of rope, a quiver of regular arrows, a small bundle of magic arrows, a signet ring, a magic feather, a cool belt, an obsidian statuette of a dragon, a healing potion, a water breathing potion, a different healing potion, some anti-venom, to say nothing of a shirt, a greasy sheepskin cloak, trousers, comfy boots, and I guess underpants. So that's 25 saving throws for my character alone. Multiply that by all the members of the party, so there's 5 members of my party, so that's 125 saving throws. And not only that, that's 125 saving throws each turn that we remain within 50 yards, that's approximately 45 meters from our metric listeners, of the burn flowers. Now, obviously, we're not going to be making all 125 of those saving throws every turn because we're going to fail some of them and we won't have to worry about that. They'll just be on fire. So that's comforting, but I don't know what to say about a monster that requires the party to make 125 saving throws a turn, other than no thank you. Now, having said that, characters on Athas probably have less stuff than my PC. This is a harsh post-apocalyptic caveman times setting where you probably just have like a lucky rock around your neck on a string and you don't wear any armor except for one spiky shoulder pad and just rely on your highly defined pecs to protect you from damage. But still, it's still a lot of dice rolling. So if you've ever wondered why spells in 5e typically only affect objects that aren't being worn or carried, which doesn't make any sense, well, it makes sense for an out-of-game reason. Does it make sense that I hit somebody with a fireball and their big bag full of magic scrolls is completely unharmed? Or their diary? Or a dozen eggs or whatever, all of those things will survive your character being engulfed in a roiling blast of flame. It doesn't make any sense, but if that is the price that I have to pay for not individually tracking each postcard or blowgun dart or spare pair of dry socks that my character is carrying, then I'll take it. I'll pay that price. Realistically, I'm sure our characters change their clothes too, but we don't bother carrying a bunch of extra outfits and clean laundry because it's a nuisance. We just assume that we're carrying it, and we don't bother tracking it. And that's fine until you run into a thing that requires you to carefully track every object you own. Potentially interesting idea in principle. I actually said fun idea in principle at first, then I had to go back and amend that, because I don't think it's that much fun. But too much work. Other than that, burn flower is a fun idea. Alright, next up we have the cat, psionic. Now these aren't psionic house cats, these are large predators. There are two types of psionic cat, the tagster and the tygoon. Tagsters are a little smaller, a little less deadly, and they hunt alone. I guess they're more kind of bobcats or whatever. And the tygoon is a bit more like a lion, they hunt in packs, or prides, I suppose. The tagsters use their psionics to track and locate their prey, but they intentionally don't do it close to their targets in order to avoid alerting them. Tygoons use a psionic ability called like radial navigation, and again, this is just a way to improve their hunting, improve how efficiently they sweep their territory looking for targets. Neither particularly uses psionics in combat, but they're physically powerful enough that this isn't a concern. Now, the Tygoon's name resembles that of the Tygon, which is a hybrid between a tiger and a lion, but it is spelled differently with an E on the end. We get another reference in here to halflings liking to hunt alongside Tygoons, which reinforces our idea that we saw earlier with the beetles, that Athasian halflings are tough little hunters who make intelligent use of the natural world around them. And we're also told that Tygoons are prized in the fighting pits, which on the one hand makes sense, because like think about beast hunts and throwing Christians to the lions and all that kind of stuff. We're definitely going for a kind of decadent Roman vibe with the city-states of Tyr. On the other hand, all the things that are special about Tygoons, like their psionic abilities and their camouflage coloration, would not actually be much use in the kind of toe-to-toe fight that I presume you can expect in the Athasian fighting pits. But whatever. The purpose of the Tagster and the Tygoon is to demonstrate how common psionics is in Athas, to give you a little more dangerous Athasian wildlife, and they are fine. They're another kind of meat and potatoes monster. They're more like a breakfast cereal monster. These are like a bowl of Frosted Flakes. A bowl of Frosted Flakes isn't a meal that's going to change your life, but there's nothing wrong with it. I mean, apart from all the sugar, of course. You know what? This metaphor is not going anywhere. My point is, they're fine. And you got two of them on one page, and they have like little bits of detail that make them a little bit different from each other. Sounds good to me. All right, so that is about all the Athasian monsters that we have time for today. In our next episode, we will be continuing our journey through the monsters of Dark Sun, so I hope that you will join me then for Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great. Thank you for listening. If you've got a favorite monster or something you'd like me to talk about, why not get in touch? I'm on Twitter as @GonzoHistory, on Mastodon as GonzoHistory@dice.camp, or you can find me on Instagram at MonsterManGonzo, or drop me an email, gonzohistory@gmail.com. Our theme music is an extract from Solve the Damn Mystery by Jesse Spillane from the album Descent of the Goober Monster, and is used under a Creative Commons Attribution License. Our cover art is by Ray Otis. Thanks for listening, and please join me next time for Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great.